Will the meeting please come to order? If I get a microphone. Today is Tuesday, July 28th, 2015. The first part of our meeting is normally public comment. I have a sheet here with two names on it. Do you want to talk during public comment or do you want to talk during the public hearing? We got both tonight.
I don't understand this well enough to know for sure.
Public comment is you can talk about anything you want under the sun, okay? But you have to limit it to 3 minutes, okay? Under public hearing, we have several items on our public hearing. We have amendments to the city tied code Title 10 relating to animal rights. And then another one, amendments to Title 10, Chapter 3 regarding rezoning of certain portions of the of our area. So
that's the portion.
Both of you, okay? We'll save that for that. Anybody else want to sign up before I? If not, we will close the public comment session. I'm not speaking English tonight. And like to acknowledge that David Dredge will be a voting tonight.
John Dredge
will be voting this evening. Yes. Okay, public hearing is now open on the first amendment. It's the amendment to City Code Title 10 relating to animal rights in the R1-15,000 zone. No comments on that? If so, I will close that section.
What's the intent?
Pardon?
What are the changes that are being proposed there, I guess?
Theoretically, you were supposed to have already known this. And public hearing, it's a time which we listen to you, and we don't really make any comments at that point. What it is.
Read them the recommendation there, Glenn, from staff.
Yeah.
I can read it if you want, Glenn.
Go ahead, have you got it?
What staff's recommending, the Planning Commission make a recommendation to City Council to allow for large animal rights to be included in the R1 15,000 zone.
Before they were only allowed in the R 20,000. So we've changed the zoning, and so we need to move that into the 15,000. Okay, so it's to everyone's advantage. Second part of our public hearing is amendments to Title 10, Chapter 3, regarding the rezoning of certain portions of the area currently in the R1-2000 to an R1-15,000 zone, portions of the area currently in the R1-2000 to the H1 Hillside Zone, the Cottages Park, Doral Park, Cedar Run Park to the PF Public Facility Zone, and to amend the official zone map to reflect these zone changes. First person who has signed up for that would be Cheryl Boone. If you'll please come up and state your name and your address, please.
My name is Cheryl Boone. My address is 9454 North Canyon Road. I'm not 100% sure what I want to say because I just was told that this would affect our property. I would like more information about what this is, why we would be zoned in a residential, I don't know. I don't know exactly all what the specifications are and stuff with any changes that are going to be made, that are proposed to be made. So any information would be great to have a little more. I don't know, sometimes as I was reading through those, I have no idea what it said. It's just, you know, zone da 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 to this. I had no idea what it was saying, and so and how it would affect the people that, you know, that it says it's going to affect. what benefit it is. Property taxes, like we said, along with the animal rights and such. So I'd just like to have those questions and concerns addressed so I can understand them a little more clearly.
We will be addressing those later on tonight, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Allen.
I wasn't able to make the proposed meeting that you had before that got canceled.
Oh.
But based on some information that my wife
your
brought
name
home.
And your address.
Steve Allen, sorry, 9590 Canyon Road.
Thank you.
Based on the information that she brought home, basically what I gathered was that allowing just a third-acre lot instead of a half-acre lot, taxes remain the same, animal rights basically remain the same. Is it necessary to change that zoning, or can you just amend the ordinance that we have to allow the third-acre lot, or amend the zone that we currently have? That's sometimes when we make these zoning changes, we get a little bit suspicious of what's driving the change, and that's the part that's hard for most of us to understand is, well, if everything's okay and all we need is to change the size of the lots that can be developed, then why don't we just amend that zone and leave things as they are? It's just an underlying concern that we have, because there seems like when things like this take place, down the road somewhere something comes along and you go back and say, well, this wasn't supposed to be happening, that wasn't supposed to be happening, and then that came along with the change. So it's kind of past experience makes me wonder if it's just this one key thing, or perhaps there's something more included that's not obvious.
I think you'll get your answer in a little bit. Anybody else who desires to talk during the public speaking, during public hearing area? If not, I declare it closed. The first item on our agenda is review of the recommendations on amendments to City Code Title 10 relating to animal rights. Chandler?
Okay. Hopefully we can get, I feel like I'm really close to you. hopefully we can get all your questions answered and you can walk out of here with some peace of mind. So the first thing on the agenda was the amending the Title 10, Chapter 4, Section B to include large animal units. One change I want to make a note is in your packet we had a draft ordinance made, and some of that's wrong. For some reason, during the draft, it got put in the permitted uses when animal units have always been in conditional uses, because in this case, large animal units are conditional upon certain requirements that the code has, such as a certain amount of agricultural area dedicated to maintenance of a large animal. As part of the process of the rezoning, we wanted to make sure that the residents that were affected by, especially by the zone change from the R1 20,000 to the R1 15,000, didn't have any negative side effects. That we wanted to foresee anything that down the line that would possibly impact them negatively. And in this case, it was the large animal units. Along Canyon Road, many of those homes are horse properties, and I understand that many of them want to be sold eventually as horse properties. And by doing that, by adding the large animal rights into the R1 15,000, they maintain those large animal units. The requirements for having a large animal unit are the same in this zone as they would be in the R1 20,000 zone. So if you have a barn in the agricultural space right now that you have in the R1 20,000 zone, changing the zone isn't going to change the amount of space that you've just dedicated to a horse or a cow, whatever you have. So that'll remain the same. Those requirements are the same in both zones.
Can you back up just a minute, based on the questions that were asked earlier, and explain where this came from, why we're even considering this change?
Yeah, I was going to talk about that in the next one, but I'll talk about it right now. if you were to look at our city zoning map, many of the homes that are in the R1 20,000 zone do not meet the requirements of the R1 20,000 zone, meaning that they are less than a half an acre. 20,000 references the square footage of the lot, about a half an acre.
And that's because they were annexed in after.
Yes. Some of the lots were old county land that were annexed into Cedar Hills when it was incorporated. Some of it was Pleasant Grove that was boundary adjusted in throughout the last 35 years. And the R1 20,000 zone has typically been the default zone that lots are placed in. So when a lot comes in, unless there's a compelling reason to put it in another zone, we put it in the R1 20,000 zone. And most of the boundary adjustments, if you were to look at a city map, happen right in the middle of this R1 20,000 zone. So by default, they just get plumped into this 20,000 zone. But after looking at the map, we saw a good reason to change the zone to let me backtrack. So what it does is it creates these legal non-conforming lots of record. And I get calls from realtors, I get calls from assessors saying this lot is in this zone, but it doesn't meet your requirements. Is it a legal lot? And the answer is, yeah, it's a legal lot. It's what we refer to as a legal non-conforming lot because in this case, it doesn't meet the 20,000 square foot requirement. By moving them to the R1 15,000 zone, which is, if you were to look at a city map, you'll notice that there's nowhere in the city currently zoned R1 15,000. There's just not anywhere, there's no homes. However, this zone was established and it is a recognized zone in the code. So we'd be moving them and they would all become legal conforming lots of record, meaning that they would conform to the zone requirements of the zone that they're in.
So will our 20,000 disappear?
No, there will still be a lot of lots that are still in the R1 20,000. The homes that we're looking at right now are all along Canyon Road. Now, as far as the process, as far as your question is to why is it this way? Why do we do it this way? The city is actually required by state law to when they're amending the zoning map to do it in a certain way. And I have a checklist here. Provided by the Utah League of Cities and Towns, where they go through each step that needs to be taken in order for any amendment to the city zoning map to take place. Namely, you have to have a hearing before the Planning Commission, which is what we just did, so that any affected residents can come. And those residents were notified. I think you guys got a mailer about 2 weeks ago informing you of the proposition, and about a month ago, too, because that meeting got canceled. But so we're supposed to notify the affected residents, and we notify the residents and then everyone within a 300-foot radius of the proposed change, and then informing them of the date of the hearing. They're invited to come, make comment, pro, con, however they feel. And then the Planning Commission is to consider it. At this point, the Planning Commission makes a review recommendation to the City Council, and once again, we go back to notifying the residents of the zone change. And so you get another letter in the mail saying we're considering this, but the next one would be before the City Council. And we'd have another public hearing before the City Council before they consider it. That way that gives everyone a good opportunity to voice their concerns. And so that's actually dictated to us by state law. That's not something we get to determine how that process is. We just have to make sure we follow their rules and guidelines.
So in terms of motive, which I think was really the question earlier, is there some hidden motive or some unintended consequence that's going to show up down the road? This really just came from wanting to take what currently exists and make it conforming by changing the zone.
Yeah, I mean, we met with a resident that wanted to develop a lot because there's a lot that's empty, but the lot doesn't meet the requirements of the R1 20,000 zone, but it meets the requirements of the R1 15,000 zone. And if you look at every house along the street, they are all legal non-conforming lots. So we're saying to him, you can't have a third-acre lot, but everyone around you has a third-acre lot. Looking at it, it didn't make a lot of sense. And so what we wanted to do was to clean up the zoning map to take those lots, like I said, and make them conforming to the zone that they're in. However, as we looked at the two codes, we noticed that there are discrepancies, the biggest one being, actually the only one I see, is large animal units. And many people that own horses want to maintain those horses. Now, if you were to not make that change and not put the large animal units into the R1 15,000 zone as a conditional use, the current property homeowners, they would still be grandfathered in with their current home, their current large animal rights. However, I do feel that it would be negatively affect them in the long run as they go to sell their property. You see signs all along Canyon Road that pop up that say home for sale, horse property. And they would not be able to do that. So that's why staff is recommending that as part of the zone change, we make that change to the R1 15,000 zone, allowing for large animal units.
So. I mean, it'll only affect the properties we're talking about because there's nowhere else in
the city. Nowhere else in the city is the R1 15,000. So it's only the ones that currently have large animal rights will continue to have those.
Right.
So, and if their home is on a third acre lot, they already have large animal rights, but they don't have the space for them. So by changing the zones and giving them large animal rights, they're still not going to have that space. If that makes sense.
Yeah, in regard to that, a number of these properties have large animals.
Yes.
And they have more than one, typically. If you subtract the space for a house from 15,000, it would say that probably the most large animals you could have is one.
Well,
now, how are you going to deal with that when...
keep in mind that one large animal unit is two horses, as confusing as that is. So.
I knew that.
It breaks it down into like, it can be like
four
goats, two cows, two horses. It depends on the animal.
Eight goats. Those are small animals. I think in terms of horses, and one unit has four legs and a tail. So that's not the case. And people with two or less will just won't be uncomfortable about this.
I hope not.
Unless they choose or decide in the future they want more than two animals.
So a person in an I-20,000, he has two horses. We've rezoned it to I-15,000. We'll still be able to keep the two horses.
Correct.
And we'll still be able to sell the property as horse property, allowing two horses to be on that property, even though it is zoned I-15,000.
Yeah. So really there's no change. The only real change then would become density. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here, but the density changes. As we discussed, I think it was in June. Was it in June? No, it would have been May. In May, we talked about some of these lots as you go from, they're big, and as you go from 20,000 square feet to 15,000 square foot requirements, they would pick up another unit. However, as I added last time, once you add in the need for, you have to put in a road and curb gutter sidewalk, a street profile, you really don't have the space to pick up that extra unit anyway. Nobody's lot is that big. So
in the future, if I'm buying or I have an I-15,000 lot, will I be able to have a horse or two or three?
An R1-15,000?
An R-15,000. I'm just now buying the lot and going to construct a home on it. Will I be able to put a horse on it?
That depends. If your home is a third-acre home, right. So it's barely 15,000 square feet, the answer is probably no, because the large animal unit requires an agricultural area. It requires a barn. It requires a place to run. And I believe that was 10,000 square feet for one large animal unit. So you're looking at a quarter acre dedicated just to the horses. So if you have a 15,000 square foot lot and 10,000 square feet of it is dedicated to horses, you have 5,000 square feet for a home, and that's just not going to work. So the only properties that really can have horses are the ones that are much larger than the 15,000 square feet. And they're much larger than the 20,000 square feet as well.
So the people who have horses now, they're not affected by this.
They're not affected. Now, the reason that we didn't just carve out the horse properties and leave them as is when we do the zoning map, we don't like to spot zone. We like to have the zones be fairly contiguous with one another. We'd like to have them make sense and run parallel, and that was the way we decided to do it, by making them all legal conforming lots of record, and some of these homes would just be big lots in a smaller zone. So are there any other questions?
Are there any questions from the audience?
Yeah. So I'm back to the one question. If it's a matter of lot size, why not amend the existing zone for a smaller lot rather than...
That's what we're doing.
That is precisely what we're doing.
That's exactly what
you're changing the zone.
But changing the...
And then amending that so it can have the property rights. Why not just leave the zone the same and amend the property size?
Well, that would still be changing the zone from the R1 20,000 to changing it to be R1 15,000. So since we already have the R1 15,000 zone as an established zone within the city, it's just taking those properties and moving them into that zone rather than having two zones with the same underlying requirement. Does that make sense?
The property tax.
Good question. I spoke with the property tax assessor down at Utah County, and the way that they look at the property is they're either primary single-family dwellings or they're secondary houses. If this is your primary home, your property taxes aren't going to change because you're not putting, it's not becoming a duplex when we change the zone. It's not changing anything on the property. You're not changing your square footage. You're not changing the primary use of the property. So your property taxes aren't going to change. They're not looking at the zone saying, okay, well, this is now R20,000, or this was R20,000, now it's R115,000, so the property taxes just changed. They're looking at it saying, this is a single family residential unit in a single family zone, and it's going into the same exact category. So it's the way that they see it, there's really no change.
We have the section that's agriculture.
And that should stay the same.
And that will stay the same.
Yeah, if the county has that as ag land, that should stay the same because currently it's still in a residential zone, but it's being deemed by the county, not the city, as it's being deemed by the county as greenbelt or ag land. So if that were to change, that's something that you would have to work out with them because the city makes no determination on that being greenbelt. That would be straight with the tax assessor's office. So. And we're not going to send them anything saying otherwise that it's got a house on it. They would see that themselves. So that's a good question.
Any questions from the commission? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Down here in your motion here, it says Title 10, Chapter 4B, Section, it has 3, it should be 2.
I think it is, you want it to be 3.
It should be 3.
Should be 3.
It should be 3. This is what I was saying is Section 2 is the permitted uses. Large animal units in the city code are always in the conditional uses because it's conditional upon them having the necessary space.
All right.
Sorry, can we ask one more question from the audience?
Yes.
I just had a quick question. I'm sorry I'm late.
Okay.
I have 2.6 acres behind my home with a horse and goats on it, and that's part of this that's going to be changed to the R15,000. Is that going to affect my horse rights at all? Not at all.
No. That's what we're talking about right now, is by changing the zones, we're adding the large animal units, which is the horses, into the zone that you're going into. So it's not necessarily, oh, my horses are grandfathered in. They would be specifically allowed in that new zone as a conditional use. Meaning
it would be an RR?
It'd still be R1, not RR. But it would, if you currently have the horse land dedicated to the horses, that's not going to change. And since that new zone that you'd be put in would have the large animal rights added to it, those large animal rights would stay the same.
So if I would it still have horse rights?
They would, as long as the properties would still have horse rights. But if you were to this is what we were just talking about, is if you were to subdivide into 15,000 square foot lots, those lots would have, in theory, horse rights. But to have horse rights, you'd have to have a certain amount of property dedicated towards the maintenance of the horse. And when you get down to 15,000 square foot lots, it's very difficult to have a horse on it. So, and that's kind of the game you have to play, is how do you subdivide? Because with 2.5 acres, you could split it into two lots and have each lot have horse rights. And have horse rights. Both lots could have horse rights and horses. But if you were to go to the smallest or the highest density that you could possibly, those, even though they're in the zone that allows for horses, they probably don't have the space for it.
Okay, that would be my choice.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and so you'd be probably meeting with me and going through the whole planning process.
If I wanted to do two.
If you want to do two or four, or however you wanted to do it, okay. We would sit down and meet, and there's a whole process you'd go through on that one.
But, all right, thank you.
Is there any intention or motivation for high-density development in that area? Is there anything that's kind of in the back?
No. No.
Having grown up, this is, I was born in this area, so having grown up in this, you kind of get suspicious of changes like this.
No, there's no duplexes or apartments or anything like that. It's simply single family dwellings, third acre lots. So, good question though.
Any other questions? Not, I'd entertain a motion.
All right, I move that we recommend the proposed changes amending Title 10, Chapter 4B, Section 3 to allow for large animal unit to be allowed as a conditional use in the R1 15,000 zone.
Do I hear a second?
I second.
All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed,
aye.
Nay. Motion passes. Next item on our agenda is to recommend or not recommend the proposed changes amending the portions of the zoning map found in RR 1 to 20,000 H1 and PR3.4 zones to be rezoned as R1 15,000 and PF zones.
Translate that into English. The two zone changes that we didn't talk about, are there any questions on changing from R1 to R20,000 to R1 15,000? Okay. The other one is changing from R20,000 to the H1 zone, and this is for the lots that are in the Avenue Acres HOA. The zone line goes right through that HOA, and that HOA was developed as a PRD. They're in that HOA. They can't have horses anyway, so we're just going to put them in the same zone as the rest of the HOA. That's the proposed change from the R1 20,000 to the H1 zone. Now, the other zone is there's three parks throughout the city or land that one of them is going to be a park one day. If you look at the zoning map, the city keeps all of its public facilities, the schools, parks, trails, city facilities like the fire station, city building, water tanks. Those are all zoned as public facilities. This would be taking those parks and placing them in the public facilities zone. It just locks them up that way as parks. They don't get any density. They can't ever be developed. In the case of Cottages Park, which is the end of the Cottages HOA there, about once a year I get a call from developers saying if I'll arrange the sale of half of that land to them, they'll develop the park and they'll put a house on the other half. And this keeps that entirely dedicated to a park. So that's what we want to do, and that's what we're proposing. So are there any questions on the other zone changes?
I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. We're talking about three properties, is that right?
Three properties going from their respective zones into the public facilities zones. And they're kind of at the various corners of the park. Cottages Park is at the very, very bottom of the city, the very south end. Cedar Run Park is on the very west end of the south, next to American Fork, next to the Murdoch Canal. And Doral Park is a little itty-bitty speck in the Cedars HOA, the Cedars East.
And they're all within their own zones, and what you want to do is put them in the PF zone so that they cannot
be developed. They're recognized as parks. Yeah. Okay. Two of them are currently parks. I'm not worried about them being developed because they're parked.
Developers.
But it just puts them in. It makes the city map. It makes the city's zoning steady, where we have all of our parks in the public facilities zone. The last one is a park that has not yet been. Has not yet been put in that zone. It's not been developed. It will one day. I believe it's on the capital projects. No. Bay Hill is currently zoned a public facility. It's cottages down at the bottom. There's not a park there. But there will be in about 2 or 3 years. What that is, I don't know. Bay Hill is...
Right up here.
It's connected with the city building. So it's Bay Hill Park and the city offices.
It
it's all kind of looking like one parcel on the map.
Okay. Right there.
So.
Chandler,
yeah.
It looks to me, on Avenue, does that zone line cut through
this
the lot?
This is a terrible server.
It doesn't even look like it's on the lot lines.
It's not.
Okay.
Another reason to do this.
Okay. I was just going on that. Weird looking.
But Avenue is a plant, what's called a planned residential development. They got their density based on the size of their project. They dedicated some land to the city as open space, and they've clustered their homes a little bit closer together than the H1 zone requires, but that is part of the PRD code. If you remember Lakeview Trails, they did it the same way where they had a large open space dedication, and they clustered their lots in the development.
So that just affects those Avanyu. That is, what was there, like 7-8 lots?
Yeah.
Sure. Are there any questions from the audience? Fairly confused too, huh?
Did you guys get to see a map? You have one, okay.
Any questions from the commission? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Yeah, I'll move that we recommend the proposed changes amending portions of the zoning map found in the RR1, 20,000, H1, and PR3.4 zones to be rezoned as R1, 15,000, and PF zones.
I second the motion.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes. Next item on our agenda is a discussion, and it's a discussion only, on circular driveways on the side setbacks. It's in City Code 10-5-5C6.
So if you were to, in your packet, we sent you a site plan for a home that's in Cedar Hills. Currently, we allow for circular driveways, and they have to be in the front setback, and both entrances have to be, both egresses have to be in the front setback. However, if you look at an aerial of the city, there are a number of places where they have circular driveways going from the side setback and the front setback. Now, this is before the city, the Planning Commission, because the code dictating the terms of a circular driveway are found in Title 10, which means it's a land use issue, which means it has to go to the Planning Commission for any sort of review or recommendation to the council. As we were looking at this, the more I looked at it, the more I had discussed it with our city engineer, city manager David Bunker, the more I felt like we should allow for circular driveways to go in both the side and the front setbacks. So you have, is the site plan for a home that did a circular driveway, and we told them they couldn't, but they did it anyway. But then when I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, it actually makes sense. This is probably bad code. So in this case, you see the lot has a access off of Mesquite Way and then another access on White Pine Cove. Now, my major concern with circular driveways that went over a corner lot between a side and a front setback was making sure that any site triangle, any site distances as other cars pulled up was left open. So that's what you see is that red triangle.
Now, you mentioned corner lot.
Corner lot.
Right. So that's an additional stipulation that I wonder if that might want to be part of what we're considering.
Yeah.
We all, you know, you say front yard and side yard. I'm picturing in my head lots of lots that have side yards. I don't know that I want them developing driveways that start to screw around with what we call the side yard, unless...
Well, we would currently allow an interior lot to put in a cement pad.
Right up to the property line.
So it really, the only ones that could do it is are corner lots. But you're right. We probably, as we draft the code, there's no code drafted yet because I wanted to have a discussion for us.
Well, my only thought was maybe should we stipulate that it is technically a corner lot, and then I don't know if we clearly define what a corner lot.
Oh, I think we have the code already enforced that because in the code, it talks about corner lots on setbacks and interior lots on setbacks, and we have the corner lots have a different setback because they're adjacent to two different streets. So we already have those definitions in there. But I wanted to bring this to you for discussion so you could see what we were talking about. My big concern, like I said, was maintaining that open vision area. So you see what a 45-foot from the point of curvature on this White Pine Cove home would do, and you'd see that the driveway is not affected. It doesn't block any view as long as the vegetation there is kept in trim, but that's the same thing we would do for any corner lot. Are there any concerns in addition to that one that we would need to take into consideration in order to draft code or anything that you want to bring up?
It seems to me like the critical issue is the triangle. As long as that's clearly stated in the ordinance, I think it protects the safety in that intersection.
Well, the only other, I'm maybe getting just a little too fine-pointed here, but the reason I'm asking this question, we have a house in our neighborhood where the driveway comes off the quote-unquote front yard, and there's about a 6-inch piece of grass separating the driveway from the curb in the street. Yeah, it's real ugly. It's just down the street from my house.
Is it on the corner?
Yeah, it's on a corner. So
see, and this is probably what they've done is they've built it right up to the edge and said, oh, that's not a driveway. See, it doesn't connect to the street.
Well, that's where I'm going with it. So in a driveway, there's only certain things that can be parked in a driveway. So if they're going to take the corner up with a circular driveway, they're only allowed to park certain things on that driveway. How do I know the difference between a driveway and a pad where I can park lots of other things?
Pads would usually be on the side, clear and adjacent to the house.
Which is what I can do here in my quote-unquote side yard, build a pad that happens to connect to the other street because it's only 6 inches away, and now I can park an RV next to my house, adjacent to the street on the corner lot.
People are clever.
Right. So I'm just bringing this up, devil's advocate.
No, I see what you're saying. So we would need to look at parking on the circular driveway as well.
Which we define. I want to make sure that what we're allowing here is quote-unquote a driveway, which then seems to be defined as something that you can only park certain things on.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't affect the case you're talking about because they've avoided making that a driveway, sounds like, deliberately.
They did.
But that would still, I don't see how this would, you know what I'm saying?
It may not, and I'm kind of trying to poke holes in it. Just, I think it's a good idea, Chandler, I do, and I agree with your site plan. It makes sense to me.
Well, and I think it gives people more options with how they lay out their lot.
I agree. That's
a good thing.
I like the idea. I'm trying to poke holes in it. Just
I appreciate that. I'm not.
So that we write it in a way that protects the other folks who live around this person.
Well, I mean, part of the reason we brought this up is because when we told this person no, they came back with a bunch of pictures, like it was like four examples of lots without this throughout the city that say, hey, this guy did it, this guy did it. Yeah. And as I think about it, I'm like, well, I've never ever gotten a complaint about these. So maybe this is something we need to change because it makes sense. So
I had a question. There are, of course, separate requirements if there's a stop sign at this intersection, yes?
Yeah.
And those would supersede what we're writing here?
Yeah, in this case, yeah. I mean, I think that one clause that we had talked about as staff was that it would be determined by the zoning officer or the building official, whoever, based on any safety concerns as well as a stipulation. Because if there's something there that is of a concern, let's say it's a school crosswalk, even though I can't imagine where that would be, but something that would be concerning to people.
Topography, if you had a hill or...
We would take that into consideration and say, look, based on this reason, and I don't want it to be, it can't be arbitrary or capricious, but there would have to be a very good safety argument against allowing somebody to do that. And so we'd have to just look at how we draft that.
It would seem to me that this could become a pad to park a large RV.
It could.
But then the problem becomes one of site corridors and
as long as
safety issues, whether it blocks the view of that corner or not.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like if somebody would want to do this, they would have to, on their lot plan or whatever, stipulate that this is now a quote-unquote driveway I'm building, not to be used as a pad. And then the code states clearly on a driveway, it says not to be used for parking and storage of any trailer, camper, motorhome, etc.
Yeah, okay.
That's 6D.
Okay, let's...
I just want to make, I want to make sure...
Is it talking about 10.5.6D? Where are you looking?
Yeah.
10.5.6D?
Looks like 10.5.5.
10.5.5.6D?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
10.5.5.6D.
6D delta.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll take a look at that. And, the code may bounce between you and me a month or two before it's satisfactory. So I just wanted to get some feedback, and we'll definitely draft something and come back next month with something for you to review.
But. Any further questions or comments? I think you've got our ideas, basically, Chandler.
Okay.
Let's move on to the next. Signs. Chief, something new.
I came in with signs and I'm going out with signs. 11 years have passed in between.
I don't know what you guys are going to do with your whole evening. We're moving fast.
We're not the city council.
They've been fast lately, too.
So they say.
So currently, if you were to look at our...
Sorry.
If you were to look at our... What was that?
He said, sorry. I said, no, I like the short meetings.
Oh, yeah.
I'm all for it.
Me too. So if you were to look at our municipal code, 10.5.26, it's our ordinance regarding signs. And those of you that have been on the Planning Commission for a number of years, I know, Craig, you've probably memorized this already. I know we've gone through this ad nauseum, it feels like sometimes. But this is something that has come up again. Let me give you some background on it. Those of you that travel down 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive, the roundabout there, notice that the city uses that roundabout as kind of a forum for city events. You'll see family festival signs, you'll see recreation signs, you'll see committee signs like the Honk production put a sign up there. So it's used by the city. And what it does is we've noticed that as we use that roundabout and the sign is in the roundabout, our participation actually goes up. We had a period of time when we put the sign off to the side on one of the corners of the roundabout, off not in the circle, but on one of the entrances. And what we saw was a 15 to 30% decrease in the amount of participation in the recreation programs. So something like Junior Jazz, I had the numbers for the city council, but I don't have them here before me, but Junior Jazz decreased only 15%, but it actually came out to be almost 100 kids, which is a league, like a full grade league. And that decrease actually decreased the rec revenues by almost $10,000.
And you believe there's a tie between these?
Well, yeah. I don't want to say it's all one thing, but when everything else is constant, as far as emailing your email list that you have through signups, sending flyers to schools and putting signs in all the other normal places, it's hard to say that a great portion of that decrease wasn't the result of simply moving a sign. So what the problem is we want to... The balance here is that the code there, 10.5.26, if you were to look at, which is one?
Is it B4?
It's exemptions, and it's B. Yeah. There's a provision there that it gives the city ability to put signs in the public right-of-way. Now, the right-of-way is not just any city property, but it's the right of way. It's the steep street cross section. It's where stop signs go. So the signs that are listed there are regulatory signs. They're yield, they're stop signs, stop lights, mainly traffic signs. However, our rec banners are not regulatory. They're more informative. And we've been putting them in the right of way. And so there's the city council last week had a discussion about it, and like I said, this is a Title 10 issue, so you guys get a crack at it. We need to come up with a way of, A, do we want to change the sign ordinance to allow for signage like that in the city's right-of-way, or if we don't, are there any changes that we do need to make to allow the city to advertise in some way? Now, I say the right-of-way because the whole roundabout is the right-of-way, but if the right-of-way is, if you look at a street cross-section, it's typically a foot of grass off the curb, a foot of grass, and then the sidewalk, curb gutter, the road, and then curb gutter, sidewalk, and another foot of grass. That's considered the right-of-way. But in a roundabout, that circle in the middle is part of the right-of-way there. So if you were to look at around the city, the signs, a lot of the signs that we place that are informative for family festival, for recreation, are in the right-of-way. And we need to find a way to do that. We wanted to make sure that any changes went to this body. So I don't know how you feel about that, but that's the story.
So if we let the city put signs, can anyone put signs up? Because it mentions a public forum. Again, I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
That's a good question. Now, let me add some more information. When we were presenting this to the council last Tuesday night, David Shaw, our city attorney, was there, and he agreed that by placing these informative banners in the roundabout, in the right-of-way, you're breaking your own ordinance. So if you want to do that, if you want to put those banners there, you need to change your ordinance. If you don't want those banners there, don't change your ordinance, but you probably should make other changes to the sign ordinance allowing you to put signs other places. Or you know what, allow signs to be in the right-of-way, just not in that roundabout. There's different ways we can approach this. But as far as a public forum, the city has not really allowed that roundabout to be used as a public forum simply because people can't just walk up to it. There's not a sidewalk leading up to it. It's not a designated ground for people to be on.
They certainly can't personally attend the signage, which is the language from here.
Yeah.
Safely.
Because at some point you're crossing the road where there's not a crosswalk, so the city can't guarantee your safety there.
But you're going to ask a city employee to do so.
We have so much courage, it's unbelievable.
They have insurance. but my point is, you're allowed to put a sign up yeah. there, but, you know,
I'm
not allowed to.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. And if
as
that's
a private resident.
But, I mean, we don't allow election signs to be placed on city property. And that's simply because I appreciate that. I think that leads to good dialogue. But we don't allow city signs or election signs to be put on city property simply because it looks like the city might be endorsing that candidate when in fact it's not.
That's true.
So, something to consider.
What about? I don't know. What about like some kind of a dedicated monument sign there that you could put upcoming, you know what I mean? Something
yeah.
that's, instead of T-posts and a banner, you have some fixed thing that you put information on.
It's a community.
That communicate, yeah, like, community, I don't know, like the marquee at the elementary.
We've talked about that because...
I mean, I think it's useful to communicate that. But
it is, but you got to communicate it in a manner that still is aesthetically
right.
pleasing. And I think that's the main issue, is that roundabout, as you pull into Cedar Hills, that's really... the entrance to Cedar Hills from the west.
But I mean, somebody who's bugged by a, you know, sign up for soccer now sign, I don't know.
But I mean, like, in their defense, there's been a couple signs up there that looked pretty ratty.
Right.
I mean, because they put the T-post in, and the T-post is, you know, 6 feet out of the ground. The sign is 3 feet. So you have this 3 feet
well,
of post, and then
different length T-posts.
Someone took one of the T-posts, so they attached the bungee cords to a tree on the other end.
Right.
We can make it look a little better as staff, and we've talked about doing some sort of marquee, you know. But eventually, if the marquee is going to go in the roundabout, it has to be allowed for that.
I understand.
And so if this body doesn't, if that's not palatable,
but you could put language in saying no temporary signage. Which would eliminate, you know, political signs and stuff. But so it would only be things that were on those official fixed signs. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
If you did a marquee, which I'm intrigued by, it'd have to be pretty flexible in terms of.
Well, you could just have something you could stretch you could put a band, you know, those banners in, but make it, you know, so it's in a.
Or is it like a school sign?
Like a marquee, like an electronic
yeah,
marquee? We don't allow those in our code.
Pardon?
We don't allow those in our code.
Yet.
So.
But well, certain things are not allowed in the roundabout as well, depending on the speed limit of the roundabout. You can't put a big steel post in there, 4-inch pipe.
It's
really close
to you can, I don't know. But the speeds of our roundabout. So
the speeds of our roundabout. the speeds that it should be.
but the posted speed. Because you're right.
It's 25.
There is limitations as the speed
increases.
Well,
I think there's state rules, but
there are. But the 25 mile an hour ones, I don't think there's much limitation.
I don't think there is, because I mean, you look at Alpine.
As you get to the faster, like Alpine has the wall.
Well, we dealt with it in another place, and anything that would impede a car going completely across the roundabout was prohibited.
But
a metal post.
I saw that roundabout in Ivins. That's the one with all the horse statues. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, a lot of people like putting great big rocks in there.
I know, but that one you cannot see through it. It looks great, by the way. but
you can't see.
You cannot through. See through. But when you approach a roundabout, you don't need to be able to see straight through. You need to be able to see to your left and look at.
Sorry.
In Europe.
No,
no, you need to look left and make sure that you're yielding to any oncoming traffic there. It doesn't matter what's to the right. And you mean you look right, but for pedestrians, but. Right. Your line of sight is to the left.
They're driving roundabouts in Mexico.
But I mean, really, if it were to get to the point where it's, you know, put it in a marquee, put it in some sort of way that, you know, is presentable, it still needs to be allowed.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But I guess my thought is that if it's something that's permanent and established, then you can say no temporary stuff, and that eliminates. You know, the potential problem things, because the only thing that's allowed is the official city thing, and it's what you guys, you know, what the city
do a very low.
But the signage would have to that provision, the exemption there, would have to be changed in order to allow non-regulatory signs.
Right. But I'm just saying, you could add the language to say regulatory signs and, you know, permanently fixed, you know, established signs, and that would eliminate the temporary signs that would, you know, what I'm saying. I'm not saying this is the best answer. I'm just saying I don't see the problem. I mean, I think it's. I mean, I know we're this. You know, I'm the guy that drives by and says, "Oh yeah, soccer signups."
Right.
So I, you know, I appreciate what's being communicated. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of a way to do it, but not open the can of worms of everything else going into.
Yeah, I understand that.
When we look in under signs, under 15. -5-26(2) and 3. It says here, to promote health and well-being of the public generally, pedestrians and motorists, by minimizing obstructions, visual or otherwise, distraction. A sign is a distraction and related safety and traffic hazards within the city. And to preserve and enhance the beauty of the city by minimizing visual clutter. I consider a sign visual clutter. And regulating physical characteristics of and placement of signs within the city.
And that's the argument on the other side of, like, yes, you have a roundabout and it's a great place to inform people of upcoming events, upcoming things. However, that's not what the roundabout's for. That's the other argument. There's an argument on both sides here. And to be honest, I think the council is, there's people on both ends. So that's why it's here. You guys get to solve the problem. I think Councilmember Reese wanted to say something.
I was just going to say Craig, on your suggestion, I think that would work for the roundabout, but there are other places that the city's been placing signs on Canyon Road, on the 9 acres on 48, at Heritage Park, which wouldn't then be allowed.
Yeah.
Unless you put up something permanent.
I mean, we could put them there. They just have to be, like I said, off the sidewalk another foot or two and, you know, out of the right of way. But I don't know.
So they could be on...
Like,
they
we could
be on the PF properties. They just couldn't. They just have to be a foot off the back.
Whatever that street road profile, whatever that right of way is indicated as,
right,
needs to be out of that.
Right.
So, but we typically don't put a lot of sign, like banners up in Heritage Park, and maybe that's something that needs to change. Is people look for information somewhere else?
Well, you can specifically prohibit them on roundabouts.
You can, and we talked. That was part of the discussion of the council. Is you allow for signs in all the right of ways except for the roundabout.
Signs violate those two general provisions very clearly. Well, to me.
Yeah. Well, to you and a lot of people, though, in your defense.
I can see both sides because when I come up, I always look at the signs too to see what's going on.
And crashing into the car that just came around.
Yeah, that too. I haven't done that yet, but I'll try it. So
they are distracting.
There has to be a happy compromise somewhere along the line. And I think the marquee sign is perhaps that happy compromise, but the marquee sign to be built as we have in our guidelines.
Right.
Something that looks decent instead of...
Oh, I think it would need to match the commercial area. It would have to be, you know, red brick. Like the sign we made AmSource go through, it would need to follow those same provisions, I think.
Right. Well, and, you know, and if there was something fixed, then that might be, you know, you'd know where to look. You wouldn't have to wonder where the sign was going to be put up this year. You know?
Yeah.
That's right. I don't know. I mean,
in a lot of towns, you have a city hall. So out in front of the city hall is a marquee, a monument sign, and... people know to drive downtown past the town square or whatever, and that's where they're going to get, or a library or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't have those here. Located in a prominent public place.
No.
To take advantage of.
No. So we get a lot of people driving by Canyon Road, but I think the roundabout is a place that pretty much every resident there drives through eventually at some point. So
that's near the school and both schools.
Got to get to the Walmart.
So right now I have going through and disallowing temporary signage. I want to look at other cities, what they do, as far as their own government signs, and allowing for permanently affixed signage in the right of way. Were there any other suggestions to look at as we start looking into this issue?
One temptation would probably be to put up an LED sign.
Not allowed.
See, we wanted to do that at the one on Canyon Road. We wanted to do an LED sign, but it's not allowed.
Thank goodness.
Well, in defense of that, I think if you're going for a colonial look in your commercial zone, I think having big LEDs and neon signs is probably not the way to go.
There's certainly a temptation.
So, anyway.
Any other comments?
If you have any brilliant thoughts in the time being as we research this, please email me. We'll probably be spending some time on this one. So.
If there are no other comments, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Oh, one question. I'm sorry. Before we adjourn. The design guidelines, where are we at on that?
Good question. I'm glad you brought that up. I would like to have another meeting about that.
A work meeting
like we've had, where that's the only thing on the agenda. I felt like both the ones that we had before were very productive. And honestly, I think that we're like probably two work meetings away from being able to say to the council, we're done. We're going to either review, recommend this, and it's on to you. So what are your options there? What do you think?
I have no problem with that.
Okay.
Pick a date and see what we all...
Okay. It probably would end up being a Thursday, not a Tuesday. Tuesdays are a little bit harder to do, especially in August where the council meetings are a little bit off because of the election. So, well, maybe a Tuesday will work. Maybe the second Tuesday in August will work.
The second Tuesday in August is the primary election.
That's right.
Yeah.
That probably won't work.
That's true. Maybe we'll go for the second Tuesday or Thursday in August. We'll find a date and come back to you.
Okay, that sounds good. And if you're saying two meetings, then let's pick a tentative meeting in the month of September also.
Okay.
That way we can put it on our calendars and plan for it. Okay. I'd entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
So seconded.
All in favor? Aye.
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 Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Awesome.